Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the 909 podcast. It is myself, 909, and Andrea Cleary here. How are you doing, Andrea?
I'm good, Niall. How are you?
I'm grand, thanks. How are you? Hey, listener. How are you doing? Hope you're well. This is the 909 podcast. Every week we talk about some music topics, topics that are dear to our heart, topics that are happening in the news. On this episode, we are going to be talking about actually an album we did a real life event with last week, which is one of our listen closely parties in the Big Romance the last Wednesday of every month. Because we were away or off for January, we didn't do an episode about this album. So we thought it'd be nice to kind of just do a little recap almost, or like a focus as we did on the night, on the album from MF Doom and Madlib, aka Mad Villain. Let's have a little listen.
Living off borrowed time, the clock tick faster. That'll be the hour they knock the slick blaster. Dick Dastardly and Muttley with sick laughter. A gunfight and they come to cut the mix master. ICE Cole, nice to be old. Y2G Steve, twice to threefold. He sold scrolls, lo and behold. Know who's the illest ever, like the greatest story told. Keep your glory gold and glitter. For half of his niggas to take him out the picture. The other half is rich and it don't mean shit to. Villain, a mixture between both with a twist of liquor. Chasing with more beer, tasting like truth for dear. When he at the mic, it's like the place get like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, so we're going to talk about Mad Villain. Why? Because, well, it celebrates 20 years this March, and it's also considered a underground rap classic. Well, an underground rap classic at the time. It's not an underground record really anymore. It's quite noted as I wouldn't say it would be influential, but it's a classic album. It's been considered a classic album and almost immediately like codified into that kind of classic album vibe. I think we will talk a bit about Doom and Madlib and where they came from and why. We've obviously done podcasts about Doom before in 2021. We did one just after he passed away where we talked to some people who worked with him, from Lex Records and Choice Cuts here, who put him on. And what came, when we were listening back to those podcasts recently, what came out of it for me was the superhero, supervillain kind of dastardly plans, the kind of the rapper who would play with misdirection and form and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we had a fun time last week, didn't we, Andrea?
It was a really fun time. It was really great to listen to it sitting all the way through with yourself getting up to change sides. And yeah, it sounded
like... You can
like
do that too.
Sorry?
You can do that too.
I know. I'll tell the listeners. I get too scared because it's an entire room waiting for... I'm just, you know, I change my records all the time at home. But when it's a really nice system like what they have in the Big Romance, it's relatively scary. But I did do some DJing. I'm calling it DJing.
Call it what you like.
Yeah, no, it was lovely. Like, obviously, we say this about, this is our third event, and we've said this about all of them, but it just sounded incredible on the system that they have in the Big Romance. And we had a really lovely group of people coming in. And yeah, it was a nice mix of people reacting to the album differently. Some people were reading along the lyrics on their phones. Some people were just kind of had their head back, their eyes closed, just listening. Some people were up on their feet, kind of like dancing and vibing. So some people were like sitting down on the floor, just vibing it out. So it was really, really nice, like, mix of reactions to this album. And I think it's a kind of a testament to how many different ways there are to listen to this album. Like, you can have it on and kind of just pay attention to it as a piece, as an instrumental piece, and have Doom's vocals there, but not really, you know, dive into them, because he's just so pleasant to listen to. Like, the tone of his voice is just so pleasant to listen to. You don't necessarily have to pay attention to everything that he's saying, or you can go the other route of really paying attention to everything that he's saying, really like digging down into the lyrics, or you can just vibe it. So, you know, like, there's so many different ways to enjoy this album. But I do think it's an album that should, I mean, I'm hesitant to say should, but it's often by people who are fans of it enjoyed as a piece. I think it's not very common for people to kind of listen to, because the songs are so short, to kind of, you know, playlist them or anything like that. So, but yeah, it was a great night.
That's true. Mad Villainy, the album, was released in 2004 on Stone's Throw Records. It's 46 minutes long, but there's 22 tracks on it. I think there's three songs go over three minutes. And most of them hover around the 2 minute mark. I mean, Doom was always like that anyway. He would always keep his songs fairly short. And I mean, he wasn't a rapper who fell for hooks much. He didn't need to. His thing was about dense rhyming schemes and keeping that going. And it was kind of like, it was almost like the page was written, and once the page was done, the next song was on and we're doing the next song. So there is an element to that for me of Doom. And you're right, actually, like, it's so hard, almost like it was such a nice experience to listen to that album in full and give it your full attention, because I mean, that is so rare these days, because your attention does wander, and even you're listening to his words and it's so dense and there's so much going on that you kind of, it is really hard to keep your concentration on it for the whole album. And I think that's really interesting as well. Like, I mean, one of the reasons why for me this album is a classic, why many people consider it a classic, this is two masters of their craft who find a place to meet that perfectly matches like their unique music sensibilities. We've got Madlib, the producer, before he really made his full name, like, he was working with Stone's Throw, he was working with loads of labels around this time. He had made Quasimodo, which is kind of his rap album, but I mean, that is where his vocals are pitched up and he sounds like a little cartoon character, which Jeff Jank from Stone's Throw went and basically animated and illustrated, and they became this character that he did. But most of the other stuff he was doing at the time was kind of like this jazzy hip hop instrumental stuff. He created this band, a fake band called Yesterday's New Quintet, who are mentioned in Bistro on the album, and who are kind of, you know, he was his way of, at this time around 2004, he'd released a few records, but he was really kind of getting into that jazz zone.
He's the son of a jazz musician as well.
Sun Ra, you'll see from looking at sample lists and stuff like that, that kind of influence there, that kind of psychedelic cosmic jazz stuff is kind of the backdrop for a lot of this stuff. And in this album as well, it's sampled a couple of times. And as for Doom then, I mean, the funny thing that I learned from reading that recent 33 and a Third book about Mad Villain by Will Nagel is that Doom hadn't heard Madlib's music until they started working on Mad Villain. And like, Doom at that point, I mean, he's kind of establishing himself as a solo artist. His backdrop, we've covered this before, but his backdrop very briefly is Daniel Dumoulin. He was first known as Zed Love X. He started his musical career with his brother Sub Rock as KMD, and after one acclaimed album, 1991's album, Mr. Hood, his brother tragically died. He was knocked down on a freeway near Long Island, I believe. So then a follow-up album that was made was never re-released. It was Elektra Records he was dealing with. Doom kind of slunk off into the background and started doing his own thing in quiet, which eventually he started releasing. But a lot of it became, you know, it was born out of that tragedy of his brother dying and him going, no, I don't want to do this anymore. He started wearing this mask and developing this superhero alter ego inspired by the Superman enemy. He re-emerged around the turn of the century as the metal-faced Doom character. So he wore the scars of his kind of a first act in a run of comic book villain-inspired self-produced albums. We're talking, we had Operation Doomsday came out in 1999. And then we had records like the same year as Mad Villain, actually M Food, all about like food-themed rap. And then there was other alter egos like King Ghidorah, which with the album Take Me to Your Leader, which was like this kind of Godzilla type creature involved in cosmic international, I don't know, like, yeah, it was like an international cosmic or annihilation event kind of thing. This is very much comic book inspired and all that kind of stuff, like old comic books, Godzilla, all that kind of thing. And then we had Victor Vaughn, a vaudeville villain. For me, one of my favorite Doom albums certainly is Vaudeville Villain. And that's kind of like, he's like a younger, maybe more dastardly MF Doom in a way. So he kind of embodies these personas. And, you know, his whole thing is that he's got this grisly, dense rap style. It's complex, it's funny, it's eloquent, it plays with the form, it's inventive in the use of how, of its word collages and expectation and defying those expectations. In an interview with RBMA, Doom actually talks about bringing what it's like to bring or how he started working with Mad Villain, and I'll just share a bit about this so we can listen to him in his own words, because it is rare. There's very few times really where we get to hear directly from him.
Yeah, I got a call one day from it was from Peanut Butter Wolf. Up there at Stone Store, Wolf was a good friend of mine. Big up, Wolf. And he mentioned his cat, Madlib. I wasn't familiar with his work at the time. But I guess he heard some of my stuff, and he was reaching out to me so that we could do a record together, like, you know, and want to give me some beats and whatnot. So at the time, it was the same time when I was doing records for a lot of different companies and whatnot. So, you know, they offered to fly me out to L.A., you know, so it sounded like a good thing. Flew out there. Met these cats, cool, you know what I'm saying? Cats is cool from day one, you know what I'm saying? Got along with these dudes, you know, just good-spirited, good-hearted people and real record diggers, like, you know what I'm saying, beat maker, you know, had the same kind of vision in how we did records, the same, you know, real similar, you know, still unique though. He had his unique style, so that's really how it started. He reached out. Ever since then, that's been my man. You know what I mean?
They were all living in a house together at the time. Is that right? With the studio and a bomb shelter in the basement?
Yeah, yeah. They had a little mini mansion up on the hill. It was a pretty big crib, though. It was a lot of space in there, you know, overlooking the hills. So it was a good place to work at, you know what I'm saying? Real quiet up there.
So, yeah, that's kind of the backdrop. Basically, they would meet in the bomb shelter. He talks a lot about how the two of them kind of had this telepathic connection where they didn't really talk about. I mean, you could almost cynically, you could be like, these lads weren't even trying and they knocked out a fucking amazing album. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a bit like, we never really talked, but he'd send me beats and then I'd write something over him and that was our conversation. And that's a nice story. But you're like, in another parallel universe, this is a bad album that no one ever listens to because the two people who are the chief collaborators don't really talk to each other about it. But here is what Madlib actually has to say about that recording. Just some from his perspective, because he doesn't speak an awful lot about this either. So let's have a listen to him.
The process wasn't really a big deal. We just hung out, went to clubs, got drunk. I'll hand him a beat CD. I'll go to sleep. He'll work on some music. He'll go to sleep. I'll wake up. I'll make some more beats, listen to what he did. We might take some shrooms together if we awake at the same time. And and then listen to the music when it's done.
So yeah, that's as simple as that. I mean, that's kind of what the backdrop is. There is no great grand story behind this album other than it is these stupid dudes working together in LA in the bomb shelter where Madlib was based and making this album together. And what's interesting is, you know, before the album comes out in 2004, Madlib goes over to Brazil as part of this kind of Stone's Throw project. And there's an Irish connection to this as well, because there's a Limerick photographer who you may know called B Plus, who was living in LA at that time and still does, I think. And he was involved in this film called Brazil in Time, which is basically bringing a cultural exchange almost between what's the LA kind of beat maker world and the people, the musicians in Rio de Janeiro, who are making this kind of interesting original jazz music and composition stuff. And so they all, and bossa nova, samba. So they kind of go over, and the DJs and the drummers and all are collaborating and all this kind of stuff. So Mad Villain is there with his MPC sampler, which he uses all the time. But on the flight on the way over, he created he burnt a CD basically of, I think, 15 tracks of the album. And just so he could listen to it on the plane. Turns out he lost it. And then promptly what happened was the album was found. And this is the early days, 2003. So it was uploaded to the internet in this time. So very unusual for that to happen. First of all, to be found, for it to be recognized as what it was. He must have written something on it that it gave it some identity. And then to be really taken and put on the internet. And the label talk about it in the 33 and the 3rd book and how they were really devastated this happened. Obviously, this had never happened to them before. They were like, oh God, because this happened. But turns out it actually wasn't a bad thing, because all this really did was hype up the album. People got really hyped about it. You know, they heard it was a leak, that it wasn't maybe totally finished. What essentially happened was they went and re-recorded some of the stuff in the preceding months, and then the hype just actually meant that this became a quite highly anticipated record. And by the time it came out, it became Stone's Throw's biggest seller by far. And, you know, it was a big deal. And the context for 2004, we talked about this in terms of rap music. It was the same year as Kanye West's College Dropout. That was the year that it came out. So this is very, very different. And like, from your perspective, Andrea, what do you think about like why this, we're actually getting to the release of the album where it comes out and people just go nuts for it. So why do you think that people think this is the modern classic that it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to think about it at the time, right? Because I wasn't aware of this album until probably, you know, 10 years later. Yeah, it's hard to think about it at the time, because I mean, as you said, rap music was moving into a kind of towards becoming pop music, right? Like we're sort of getting ready for that stage. It has, things have a verse, chorus, verse structure. Kanye West is releasing College Dropout. Like we're very much moving rap music into the mainstream. And I guess like Doom and Madlib would have had their own followers, their own people who were very dedicated to them. Like they weren't household names by any means, but they had a very, very dedicated following, each of them. And I think the reaction to it, or the feeling around this album was that it was so different and so dense. You know, we talk about the amount of samples that are used on an album. That's something that people are generally quite interested in as a concept anyway. You know, if you hand someone a song and you're like, yeah, this song sampled like 20 other tracks, or it has 20 samples on it, like that's already something that is piquing your interest and making you, especially if you are a kind of a crate digger sort of person. And I imagine the fans of Madlib in particular are interested in like where the samples come from. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like anything else that's out. It sounds enough like both Doom and Madlib to appease their fans individually. But then it is also this magical thing that when they come together, it's like they click. Like it's like they get it. Like Madlib understands the superhero, supervillain stuff just as much as Doom does. Like they are on the same level in terms of like how they want to approach that sort of like that childlike playfulness with one another. And that comes from, you know, taking shrooms together, but also just kind of like being very creative with the kinds of samples that they're using, being very creative with the lyricism. So it just doesn't, like, to me, my instinct is to say that it just doesn't sound like anything else that's out at this time. And it sounds underground. It sounds like forbidden knowledge. You know, it sounds like this is something much rawer and much more. Yeah, I think raw is the word, much kind of messier. It's kind of like the White Album, you know. It's like it's this relatively short album, all of these short little snippets, but they're all so densely packed with interesting things that on your first listen you don't get at all. So it also invites a lot of, like, it has a replayability value that is higher than most albums, even within hip hop, which I think are very replayable because of like the lyricism. But this has a replayability value that is, like, you know, will sustain people's interest in this album for like 20, like where you said it was 20 years this year.
Yeah,
people are still as interested in this album now as they were when it came out, more so even. So yeah, I mean, that would be my instinct in terms of like why it hit the way it did and why people were interested in it. But also there's a lot of mystique around MF Doom, and I think there's a curiosity about what he's going to sound like with a new collaborator. Like, he'd obviously worked with Danger Mouse, and he does seem to be somebody that is, I always speak about him in the present tense. He was somebody who worked really, really well in collaborative circumstances, and he seemed to choose his collaborators very carefully. And going from the clip that you played there, like, it seems like he is basing it off vibes. He's basing it off, will this person get what I'm trying to do? Will this person fit in with the way that I like to work, you know? And I love that it's like, I'll work then I'll go to bed, and he'll work while I'm in bed, and this sort of like these ships in the night. And you can kind of feel that on the album, that there isn't too much conversation happening around like, well, what does this mean and what should we put here? It's very instinctual. It's very it's almost kind of like improvisation, like two musicians working together in a kind of an improv way, where you don't have the time or the energy to talk to one another and dig down too deep into things and make things deeper than they need to be. And then it's just this magic that happens when the right two people get together in the same room, you know?
Yeah, and they're good fits. But I mean, like, Madlib as well provides, I mean, Doom, first of all, Doom produces his own beats usually. So he has that ability. He creates all those kind of super villain skits and uses those samples in his records. And there's some of them here as well, which he is involved in, but mostly it's Madlib's take on that. And I love that, you know, on this record, there's a playfulness to it all. Like, there's tracks like Bistro, where he's kind of introducing people. It's four tracks in. It's kind of like the album intro, but it's like, welcome to, what is it? Mad Villain. Ah, I can never remember the bit. I'm going to have to remember that. But just the way he introducing everyone and bringing in, mentioning Victor Vaughn, mentioning King Ghidorah. Like, this is the world that we're inhabiting. And Mad Villain, Bistro, Bed and Breakfast, Bar and Grill, Cafe Lounge on the Water. It's that kind of thing. It's like, we are in this place that is like no other. And I love the kind of intro.
It's nearly like a kind of a fan service thing, like that Marvel might do when they bring in a superhero that people are familiar with. Like, you get it with the Victor Vaughn thing, you get it later on with the appearance of Quasimodo on one of the tracks later on. I can't remember which one.
America's Most Blunted and Shadows of Tomorrow.
America's
two,
Most Blunted, yeah. Yeah, so it's nearly like this sort of this, you know, before we had the term Marvel Cinematic Universe, we obviously had expanded universes of comic book characters, and they'll, you know, they'll each go into each other's stories and they'll overlap. And there is a bit of that here as well.
The Mad Villain Cinematic Universe.
That kind of fan service thing, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Here's a bit of that song, Bistro, just to give you the vibe. Because I also think that the sample here is really like smart as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, Welcome to the debut grand opening of Mad Villain Bistro Bed and Breakfast Bar Grill Cafe Lounge on the Water, where we offer you the finest of the finer things. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Live on the beats, we have the one and only Mad Lib.
How do you do?
We also have King Ghidra on the mix. Yesterday's new quintet is here. Victor Vaughn, Quasimodo, and I'm your host, the supervillain. No, just lay back and have a good time. Enjoy the music, you know what I'm saying? I like to dedicate this next joint to my mans, you know, Big Hookie and Baba from the Laundromat. Two, two, one, two. How doom hold heat and preach nonviolence. He about to start speech. Come on, silence. On one starry night, I saw the light. Heard a voice that sound like Barry.
Yeah, I mean, I love this album. The lyrics are what does it for me, but I think he does. Madlib just has that, like, ability to create alchemy out of like samples. I was going through the sample list. There's a sample, if you're looking to learn more about the samples around this record, Who Sampled is obviously a great resource for this, but my favorite one is maybe the one that's in Meat Grinder, the Frank Zappa one. I'll play that in a sec. There's loads of these old like soul things, old soul songs and like jazz. There's some Indian kind of Bangra stuff as well. It's just really like really interesting sample sources. And of course, the way that he pulls this kind of stuff in, there's George Clinton, there's old jazz, there's Steve Reich. It's all in there, but it's all pulled out little bits. There are some more obvious ones. So here, I'll play a bit of Meat Grinder here so we can hear this.
Kinda dripping off the meat grinder, heat niner, pimping, stripping, soft, sweet minor. China was a neat sign of trouble with the script digits, double dip, bubble lip, subtlest midget, borderline schizo, sort of fine tits.
I think you hear there the way that Doom raps. It's like this starting this thread, and then you start pulling this thread, and you're following this thread, and then he takes you in unexpected places. That is a Frank Zappa sample. Here is what it sounds like.
And your mommy and your daddy are sleeping. It's the middle of the night, and your mommy and your daddy are sleeping.
Thanks, Frank Zappa. And this is Hulu Rock, which you'll recognize here as well. That's the Lou Howard All-Stars. So there's a couple of those kind of things which are very obvious. What about this one? That's a band called Fever Tree, 99 1/2, a 60s psychedelic band. Obviously, you may recognize that from the beat to America's Most Blooded. Let's have a listen.
There's a whole new world. Most humans consider its importance second only to sex. And grass will change your musical habits for the better.
America's Most Blooded.
Dang.
America's most plenty.
Quaz, when he really hits star mode, never will he boost loose fillies with the barcode, or take a whole carload on a wasted trip, or sit wide out lace tip from tip with him. Some rather baggies of the like that cracks him.
Yeah, that song, America's Most Wanted, is kind of like the weed rap song of the album. And at that time, we're talking backpack rap. This kind of stuff was, if you did a weed rap song, you kind of became a weed rapper. That was kind of the vibe at the time. So this is something that maybe you shouldn't have done. And bringing in things like the samples of a red man in there as well. And it's just kind of drawing on all of that, like, hey, we smoke weed. And obviously Madlib is a big weed smoker. He talks about that and how Doom is like, kind of gives out to him a little bit. He's like, stop smoking so much weed. But this is their weed song.
Mushrooms.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it, like even the context of Doom talking about going out to LA, he's like, oh, I just wanted to get back to my kids. He was living in Georgia at the time, so he would be flying to LA and coming back and hanging out, and you know, he liked getting the money as well. I think that's very clear from his various stories that he's told, like that story last time out when he was in London doing a show with Lex Records. And Tom from Lex Records talks about how he was all nice and icy during the day, and then all of a sudden when the show came, his like hype man or his entourage would like be like, no, that's it, you've ruined it, you haven't delivered what he wanted. And he would then disappear and get into a taxi, and they were laughing about it because like they knew it was all a ruse or all this like charade, because they could see that Doom was basically in his taxi going around Regent's Park doing laps just to like kind of play with them a little bit. And that was kind of his whole thing, in terms of obviously he sent out Doom posters at live shows, things like that, where people were like, we want to see the real Doom. And then he would send somebody out who wore a mask, and then this became a whole thing on the internet where it was like, you can never be quite sure if the person in front of you was actually Doom or if he was lip syncing really well. So that's another part of that kind of whole story. I mean, that's more the live story of Doom, and that went up right up to the day that he died, when he did live shows. You were just never sure if he was going to show up or he was going to send somebody. He even talked about, I think you talked about the New Yorker profile from 2009. I read that last night, and he's talking about, like sending it. He was like, I wanted to send out these white guys so people would, it would be really obvious, just like really play with the form and then just sit and stand in the crowd and listen to what people say about it. But he was
cheer his own music. He said he wanted to do.
Yeah.
To go and like cheer.
Yeah.
Go into the crowd and cheer his own music. Yeah. I mean, I think like Doom as a builder of mythology is something that's very familiar to us. And that's obviously happening on the records, and it's happening in the live shows as well. And it's happening in his interactions with, you know, industry types, industry people. He kind of wants to keep people on their toes and, you know, encourage them to expect the unexpected, whether that's a white guy coming out and lip singing to his songs, or an unexpected collaboration with another artist or something like that. He's a very strong builder of his own mythology. And it's interesting because when I think of people in rap music who are mythology builders, I think like primarily of Kanye West, and just how differently the two artists kind of approach doing that, you know, creating a mythos or creating a story or defying expectations and things. Doom very much does it with, like, keeps it for the most part within the realm of his recordings and his performance, and doesn't really go in much, you know, wanting news stories written about him, or, you know, wanting a famous wife, or, you know, wanting all the famous trappings of hip hop. He just doesn't. None of that. Like, even when he gets very braggadocious in his lyrics, it's kind of rare that it's about money, or it's mostly him rapping about what a good rapper he is. And that's fair, you know, because he is. But
yeah,
it's just interesting to see, like, to feel a kind of a difference between him and the things that he's interested in talking about when compared to other rap music at this time, you know.
Yeah. And he was, I mean, in terms of a rapper and a lyricist, he is probably my favorite. I mean, he's a lot of people's favorite, because And what Doom does and how he employs like different literary devices and how he plays with that expectation of alliteration and syllables and internal rhymes and hollow rhymes, which are like a form of rhyme where two similar sequences of sound could form phrases composed of different words, different meanings. So, you know, he always played with the form, and it kind of feels like it's this thing that's constantly morphing and changing in his mouth, and you're like, what's happening? Where's this going? Pop Monitors at the time about the album said, you can spend hours poring over the lyric sheet and attempting to grok Doom's infinitely dense verbiage. If the language is arbitrary, then many of Doom's verses exploit the essence of words stripped of meaning. Random conglomerations of syllables assembled in an order that only makes sense from a rhythmical standpoint. Now, that's some of the stuff for sure, but there's just absolutely some great lyrics on this. Some of my personal favorites. I mean, these are like almost like the way that people, Doom fans, talk to each other is just on message boards, is just like quoting their favorite lyrics. You know, on accordion, got more lyrics than the church got, oh lords, and he hold the mic and your attention like two swords, but he kind of says like swords to rhyme swords. Swords. What else we got on meat grinder, at the gates of heaven, knocking, no answer, slow dancer, hopeless romancer, dopest flow stanzas, yes, no villain, metal voted, metal face to destro, guess so, still incredible in escrow, just say ho, I'll test the yayo, wild wild west fest, y'all best to lay low. You know, it's so good. Tripping off the beat, kind of dripping off the meat grinder, heat niner, pimping, strimping, soft, sweet minor. China was a neat signer, trouble with the script digits, double dipped, bubble lips, subtle lisp, midget, borderline schizo, sort of fine tits though. You know,
that's,
and
one
he
of my favorite lines, he has record.
That, yeah, he has a like
it's
comedy,
so funny,
yeah, he
like,
has
it is
that
funny. I like Hawk Two and songs lit in the booth with the best host doing bong hits on the roof in the West Coast. It's like you can listen to him and be like, oh, he's found all these words that rhyme at one another. Well done. But then like they make sense, like, and they're clever, and like it's not just rhyming for rhyming's sake, like. He is making sense in these lyrics, even if it doesn't feel like he is on your first couple of listens, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And he was, we talked about this last week as well in The Big Romance, and how he was kind of, comedy is a big part of what he does. And even actually in that New York profile, he talks about himself as, I'm like a stand-up comedian, you know, like I'm trying to make people laugh sometimes, but also like, it's really important to me how like these words, you know, fit together and what actually happens and how they operate and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, just, I mean, I think the other thing about the album, and we talked about this last week as well, was that it's actually got a really strong ending. So it's got like a few different tracks at the end, all caps, Great Day and Rhinestone Cowboy, three of my favorite tracks, and certainly in terms of his lyrics. Like, let's play a bit from Great Day. I'll just find that bit in it where he's talking, I'll read it out then afterwards.
Mad lays the bass like the race card, villain on the case to break shards and leave a face scarred. Groovy dude, not to prove to be rude, but this stuff is like what you might put on movie food. What is jalapenos? Get it like a whooping when you holler at your seniors. Dollar, he can overhear the hashish fina. He just came from over there, the grass is greener. Last wish, I wish I had two more wishes. And I wish they fixed the door to the Matrix's mad glitches. Spit so many verses, sometime my jaw twitches. One thing this party could use is more booze. Put yourself in your own shoes and stay away from all the pairs of busted Timbs he don't use. He only keep him to decorate. If you wanna peep him, select a date and bring a deep check like checkmate. I kid you not, on the dotted line sign. Ever since a minor, kids consider him some kind of Einstein.
The line I love from that song is last wish, I wish I had two more wishes, and I wish they fixed the door to the Matrix, there's mad glitches. Spit so many verses, sometimes my jaw twitches, one thing this party could use is more booze. Put yourself in your own shoes and stay away from all those pair of busted Tims you don't use. So yeah, playing with the expectation, you think he's going to say bitches there, he doesn't. He's playing with expectation of the form of rap, of what would be out at that time or what people would be saying. So just, I love that he's done that a load of times on this album as well. And then he's like, you know, he has, we talked a bit about how some of the words that he uses, you're like, oh, that's very English. I mean, he actually grew up in England and then moved to America, and then he had problems with his visa and all this kind of stuff. So there are some of those kind of lyrics in Rhinestone Cowboy, which he talks about limey. Let me see if I can find that bit.
Stole the show for fun, or a foe for ransom. Flows is handsome, holes in tandem, anthem, random, tantrum, phantom of the grand old Opry, ask the dumb hottie, mask, pump shoddy, somebody stop me. Hardly come sloppy on a retarded hard copy. After rocking parties, he departed in a jalopy. Watch the drop top poppy, known as the grimy, limey, slimy, try me, blimey. Simply smashing in a fashion that's timely. Mad villain dashing in a beat rhyme crime spree. We rock the house like rock and roll. Got more soul than a sock with a hole. Set the stage with a goal to have the game locked in a cage, getting shocked with a pole. Overthrow it like throwing.
Ah, so good. I mean, I just think that line is so great. Like, known as the grimy, limey, slimy, trimy, blimey. Simply smashing in a fashion that's timely. Mad villain dashing in a beat rhyme crime spree. We rock the house like rock and roll. Got more soul than a sock with a hole. And there's loads of those kind of very simple rhymes throughout this album that are, like, stick in your brain and will always be there for me. Like,
Mad plays the bass Mad plays the bass like a race card. I think,
as he gets older, he gets colder than a witch tit. even though it's saying very simple, they say the villain be spitting enough lightning to rock shock the boogie down to Brighton. All right then, like those kind of real simple things no one else really does, or like as he utters the calm flow, don't talk about my mom's yo. It's like I find myself just sometimes randomly saying these things to myself after listening to it. I'm like, where'd that come from? I was like, because I was listening to Doom yesterday. Hey, you got a light? Nah, Bud Light. Stuff like that, you know, it's like just really simple, very effective, almost meme heavy tracks in terms of like instantly quotable. Hard to pick out a favorite track on the record. Probably Meat Grinder would be up there for me. All Caps is probably the biggest, for some reason, the biggest track on this. I think, why is All Caps the biggest track in terms of, it just has historically always been the one that like the hip hop heads love. So let's have a listen to All Caps.
So nasty, that is probably somewhat of a travesty having me. Then he told the people, you can call me your majesty. Keep your battery charged, you know it won't stick, yo. And it's not his fault to kick slow. Should've let your trick hold, chick hold your sick glow. Plus nobody couldn't do nothing once he let the brick go. And you know I know, that's a bunch of snow. The beat is so butter, peep the slow cutter as he utter the calm flow. Don't talk about my mom, yo. Sometimes he rhyme quick, sometimes he rhyme slow, or vice versa. Whip up a slice of nice verse. First pie, hit it on the first try, villain. The worst guy, spot hot tracks like spot a pair of fat asses. Shots of the scotch from out the square shot glasses. And he won't stop till he got the masses.
That is All Caps, of course. And basically, yeah, I mean, when this album, we talked about the leak as well. I actually found a version of the leak on a Reddit forum there last week, which I have never listened to. And I must, because the original vocals apparently are much more energetic. If you listen to some of the other records from Doom, like Victor Vaughn, Vaudeville Villain, you could hear much more kind of energy in his words and his delivery. And I think he deliberately slowed it down for, I'm not really sure why, we don't really know why, but I mean, these guys didn't really, even now, if you look at, if you listen to that 30 or read that 33 and a third book, and the whole book is pitched like this kind of funny superhero journalist trying to find out the truth about this album, because basically Madlib never wanted to talk about this record too much, because like he said at the start, we made some music, this is what it was, it was great. He said he still listens to the album all the time, which is great to hear. And just that kind of idea that, you know, like there isn't much to say about this because the mystique is all on the record. It's all there. The samples are all there. Mm. The Bollywood stuff, the weird 1940s little films that are quoted on it, the superhero stuff, the whatever it is, the Red Man sample, the weird soul and jazz stuff that's in there. There's a James Brown sample in there as well. Like, and then just those kind of references and stuff. Like, it's so dense. It's so interesting. It keeps me coming back. I even love, like, that Rainbow song. I love the track where Doom is just kind of toasting almost over the track. Like, he's not a singer. He shouldn't be singing. But it's quite hook-filled. I'll play it now for a second just to give you a bit of that as well.
Who knows who is watching? Who's watching? Oh, who
So yeah, just like riffing on a cool instrumental. And there's about 5 tracks on this album out of 22, which are just pure instrumentals as well, which are just Mad Lib beats. So yeah.
Do you have the instrumental LP?
Oh no, no, I don't. No.
You can buy it. I got it for Harry for his birthday a few years ago.
Oh, just listen to the... I never listened to just the instrumentals. That'd be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah,
cool.
If you want to like pretend you're Doom and rap along.
Nice. Yeah, I must listen to that as well. There's so many things. I mean, you just end up going back to the first source. Another thing I do love though, and this actually got me into maybe Madville, and funny enough, we did an album listening event with about 4 test album rounds, and around that time he did 2005 he did a remix of Money Folder that I think I downloaded off the internet in an MP3, and I just loved it so much, and this is a bit of that song. The underhanded ran it, planned it, and left him stranded. The best any who profess will be remanded. Yes, sir, request permission to be candid. Granted, I don't think we can handle a style so rancid. He flipped it like matter, did the old ass. So yeah, that was kind of for me, as well as like my pal who I lived with at the time playing the record before I had heard it. This was my in to Mad Villain and probably Doom in a wider sense as well. He had a lot of the vaudeville villain stuff and was really interested. That Fortet remixes, there are actually 4 or 5 remixes, I think, of from the album from Fortet as well, also available on vinyl as well. And then, you know, there was always talk about a Mad Villain 2, a Mad Villainy 2, and it never really came out, but I mean, there is like this weird Mad Lib remix which is billed as Mad Villainy 2, which is not really what it says it is at all.
Well, that New Yorker profile, the interviews for that happened while they were recording for Mad Villainy 2, but was never to be. So it was happening, they were hanging out and Doom was rapping and like they were working on it, and it just never...
Yeah, they kept saying like it was 85% done, and this was something they just would say an awful lot. It's like, no, it's coming, it's 85% done.
I kind of believe them, but like it's you know, like the album had, like this had become probably far more, you know, popular and influential and meant a lot more to people than either of them probably expected. So you could understand that like the expectations were so high for it that you'd nearly just freeze and not want to put it out at all.
Yeah. And that's true. And they, like, Mad Lib actually talks about that in the RBMA lecture that he was giving, is saying, like, expectations were just so high that I don't think we could ever live up to what people wanted. But what we were doing was basically a continuation of that. So we were doing the same thing. We weren't doing anything different. We were doing the same thing. We had made the same kind of songs, which is, I think now, maybe it will come out eventually. Maybe eventually those kind of records, if they are 85% done, we'll get there and we'll hear them. That would be great eventually. But I wouldn't hold my breath. But like, Doom died 2 years ago, so it's kind of, you know, it's I wouldn't expect anything to be happening yet. Every now and again, a track has appeared which he features on, which he recorded pre...
He died almost 4 years ago.
It was the end of...
It's 2024 now. He died in 2020.
I keep thinking of 2021, then 2022. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I had to check it there because I was like, I think it's longer than 2 years. Maybe it's 3 years.
Wow. Okay.
Well, it'll be 4 years this year.
Wow, a long time. Yeah. Most recently featured on a track on the Danger Mouse and Black Thought record, Cheat Codes, which is really good, Belize. And I think that was obviously recorded before he passed. And it's just that, like, his whole death was, again, in keeping with the mystique and enigma of who he was. He died in Halloween 2020 then. And then it was announced on New Year's Eve that he had passed. So, you know, you just, not the kind of people usually find out about these things pretty quickly, but Doom kept to himself, and that's what he always did. And meanwhile, Mad Lib has gone on to create so many different albums and so many. He's like got 85 like releases, or he's got like 40 albums on listed on his Discogs or whatever, and he's always releasing stuff. He's done stuff with Freddie Gibbs, Declame, which is one of his old pals, Dudley Perkins, a couple of albums from that old project from the late 90s that came out as well, called In the Beginning recently, which I really dug. Also, he had that I mentioned Forte produced a version of, basically, Madlib is the kind of person who makes a beat and then goes and makes another beat. And sometimes these albums come out that are a product of like a compilation of those. But Sound Ancestors, the 2021 album, was edited and kind of like executive directed by Kieran Hebden, aka Forte, who basically took some tracks that he had made and kind of put them together into this cohesive whole. So 16 tracks on that. Sound Ancestors, that's his best, most recent work, in my opinion, as well as some of the stuff that featured on Pinata, Freddie Gibbs, the album that he did, all Madlib beats on that as well. Very, very prolific artist, still making music out there. Some other classics like J-Lib, Champion Sound, the stuff with J Dilla that he did as well. So I was talking to one of the lads who was at the listening party last week, who's talking up the Blue Note Records, Shades of Blue from 2003, Madlib invades Blue Note, which I never really listened to either. So there's just so much there.
I've heard that. It's so great.
Another one to throw on the pile of your listening as well, if you're interested in what we're talking about here. And I presume you are, because we're just done now. I think we're just done with this record. But it was nice to kind of, we did a live event. We didn't get to do it in January. We didn't get to talk about it on the podcast. But we will, our next album will be, Andrea, do you want to tell the people?
Our next album will be Laurie Anderson's Big Science, and there will be an episode about it beforehand, because it's an album that maybe people aren't as familiar with, or not as many people are familiar with. So we'd like to encourage you to come. I don't know when the tickets are going on sale or anything. Do you know?
Well, in the next week or so, I'd say, once we get the artwork sorted.
Keep an eye out. Yeah. But yeah, it's a terrific record, and I love it very much, and I think it will sound amazing in the room.
Yeah, 28th of February in the Big Romance is when we're going to do that. So that will be the Laurie Anderson album in full. But that's it for Mad Villain and MF Doom and Madlib's album celebrating 20 years this month, or next month, this year. A fantastic album which is still being discovered, and it was nice to see a load of young people people in their 20s coming down and enjoying the record as well. A father and son, we said as well, maybe. You know, fun stuff, crosses generations, and that's what we'll be aiming to do. So we are back next week with more podcasting. I think those bank holidays really throw you out sometimes, when you're like, oh yeah, we haven't discussed what we're doing. It's almost it's a Tuesday already. But yeah, that's the vibe. We're getting back into the swing of things on the 909 podcast. I've got Lumo this Saturday if you're around, and if you are a Patreon, if you're a Patreon subscriber, patreon.com/909, you get free tickets to Lumo this Saturday, as well as access to loads of different recordings and playlists and our Discord access, which I think there's a meetup bubbling under on the Discord for Saturday as well. So loads more Lumo parties coming up this summer as well. We're going to be moving around a bit in terms of venues and doing some day parties and stuff. So Andrea, you'll finally have to make it to a Lumo party 9 years in.
Once you do one that starts at 6 p.m., Niall,
I'm not
going to
do one that starts at 2 p.m. How does that suit you?
That's an ideal. Even better. Yes, no, I will. I will get down
super
at some stage. Okay, right. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll talk to you.
Thanks
next week.
To Georgia Hallian for editing the podcast. Georgia. Appreciate it big time. Thanks so much. That's it from us this week. This has been the 909 podcast. Talk to you next week.
Bye.